woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down.
Hello, North Bay Stacks and Jacks. I'm always Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We also have Mr. Kevin O'Neill, and we have yet another somewhat carnage morning here. SP Futures down 92. NASDAQ Futures down 328. Dow Futures down 821. So we're... Let's see how much of yesterday we are sucking up. Two-thirds, roughly, on the S&P. Three-quarters of the NASDAQ. So I had a whole bunch of clients calling yesterday saying it was a time to get in. I said, you know, every time we have one of these bounce-back rallies, the next day we're in the crap hole again, so let's give it one more day. So what do they say? Even a blind squirrel gets to be right every once in a while, Kevin? Finds an acorn every once in a while? Something along those lines. Kevin with us?
He should be, but I'm not hearing him. Let me check.
The maybe AV put him on permanent halt or something. Maybe he's out getting a test somewhere. Kevin? Well, that's interesting. Anyway.
I can hear him off the air. Let me, I don't know what's going on.
I'll blame AV. But anyhow... You just go, just to give everybody what's going on in the rest of the world. DAX down 5%, 448. FTSE down 277, 5%. CAC around down 232, 5.8. So 5% across the board losers over there. So that's not good. Asia, not as bad. Nikkei down 284, 1.7%. Shanghai down 51.8. Hang Seng down 971. That's a whole 4%. So no, it's not a good morning so far. And, we will, Kevin?
I'm here.
Are we blaming AV for this? She left it in disarray yesterday, Manny?
Well, no, she's my friend. I'm not blaming her for anything. It's all Matt's fault.
Yes.
I'll take the blame.
No, never liked that guy anyway.
That's right. hey, but he's in here. Where, you know, he's worried, you know, is Jill coming to pick you up, or are you going to ride the rails home?
I rode the rails home on Monday because they're empty. And I plan to do that again today.
Yeah, there's nobody on there. It's Kevin, what...
Yeah, social distance, not a problem. Did anybody come up to you to play some shell game, though?
No, not yet.
No, it's...
And can you do that from 6 feet away?
Well, we can certainly social distance here at work. The people that share the office with us, they're all home. There's like four of us here, and it's a big place, so we're distancing.
Well, I've been in the office every day, and more or less keeping a distance. My assistant has probably been within 6 feet of me a fair amount, but other than that, not a whole lot. Classes are going to start with live stream. I did a dry run with a bunch of my students last night, and they're connecting okay. So I think we'll pull it off from the work standpoint here.
If we just had so let me see, what time does the news conference start today where they say the tests will be readily available at the end of the day? The only people that got tested are yet another basketball team or baseball team. Kevin, it's reached the point now.
Tom, I think you're off base on this one.
Probably.
I mean, you have, you have of all people Dana Bash yesterday. Talking about how good the press conference was, and says let me see, what's her quote? Let me have it here. Yeah, he's being the kind of leader that people need, at least in tone, today and yesterday. So this, it's recent. She's talking about this week that people need and want and yearn for in times of crisis and uncertainty. So important to hear him strike that tone of calm and understanding of how incredibly dire this is. Now, you know, she's CNN's political editor. She doesn't say nice things about him very often. But you also have Gavin Newsom. You have Jay Inslee. Even Cuomo yesterday said his teams are on it. They've been responsive late at night, early in the morning, and thus far they've been doing everything that they can do, and I want to say thank you, and I want to say I appreciate it. He's doing what he has to do, and I respect him for it. So, you know, I think there's a pretty good team of people working on this, and they started out, you know, it's like they started out spotting some... You know, with let's put it this way: if the betting line were the way you started ball games, you know, they started out with a deficit, and I think they're you know working their way back from that in terms of how they're going about building a response to this.
I agree. I echo that completely. 10 days ago, he called it a hoax, and
Matt, he didn't call it a hoax. He said the Democrats blaming him for the spread of the virus was a hoax. That's significantly different than the president calling the virus itself a hoax.
10 days ago, that's a fair point, but 10 days ago, the tone was completely different. It was blaming the media, blaming the Democrats, blaming this, blaming that, and the tone has completely changed when he finally realized, or someone told him, this is serious. And it is dire, and I do appreciate the tone change, and I do appreciate that now he's letting the adults sort of take the lead on this. But we're 5 months behind, and there's going to be a lot of deaths resulting with that late start. And I think
I don't know how far behind we really are. I think actually, in partial agreement with you, I think Britt Hume had the right comment where he said President Trump's COVID-19 actions have been sensible and in some cases bold. His White House virus task force briefings have been extensive, credible, and informative. His own statements have been rambling, boastful, vague, and imprecise, and they do not inspire confidence. And he said that a couple of days ago. And that I agree with that. But as far as, you know, getting the task force people, they've been on it. And, you know, for crying out loud, you know, within, you know, when we, December 30th, we had this identified. And in January we put up the travel restriction with China, which you know at the time he got called racist, xenophobic, that it was overkill, that it wasn't necessary. Schumer criticized him for it. Biden criticized him for it. That move alone probably saved a fair number of contagions and a fair number of lives. And that was pretty early in the process.
I am totally different tone on this thing than I've had people yesterday tell me how intelligent Mario or Andrew Cuomo sounds, which he does. I'm going to agree with you, Kevin, that in the last week there's been a massive change, maybe the last 10 days, and there have been some. I mean, but it doesn't take much for him to close the border to China anyway. That's what he wants to do. That's his playbook. Right, so
now, see, you're repeating exactly what Schumer said, that he just doesn't want Chinese people here.
Well, let me finish.
And that, you know, that's just an obnoxious statement, Tom, I think.
But my point is that we can have all we want. We can have meetings with pharmaceutical people. We can have this. We can have all the right things that we're, quote, doing. Damn it, we need the tests. I don't want another meeting. I don't want another press conference. South Korea's had them for 60 days. You got to have drive-through testing there. We don't have one.
Yeah, we need more tests. And yet, you know, Inslee is the guy who said, so far we have enough tests for everyone who has been ordered to have it. Okay, we want to test everybody, but at least the people who needed to have it are getting it in the state with the most problems.
Okay, what I'm saying is those guys, in my mind, in handling this thing, those guys are all wrong. They're all wrong. Because right now we need to know whether we're on foot or horseback. We need to know what the penetration is into society. We need a random sample. We need to have some kind of number of how many people have it and don't know they have it, how many people don't have it, and how many people have had it, have the antibodies, and by the way, they're no longer contagious, and we don't have to worry about them. We have no concept.
That latter one was interesting because I saw Cheryl Atkinson ask that question yesterday, where she was saying, you know, would it be nice to know how many people have had it and are no longer, you know, have had it pass and are no longer contagious, or at least, you know, are there, you know, can we identify people? But again, when you go from zero, are you going to go from zero to 300 million? How long is that going to take?
Well, I mean, I want to know, Kevin. There's a social cost to this, and the way in Maddie Weber was talking about his Jill's grandmother is, you know, the fact that nobody's going to see her, which is makes sense, is driving her nuts. Okay, which wouldn't surprise me. I mean, we're social creatures. They all have to be somewhere. And now Jill's mom is afraid to go see her. Well,
not afraid. It's locked down.
Right,
she can't go see her.
But now in Korea, she'd go take a test. If she doesn't have it, she goes over and sees her. Now, you know, I mean, we should be at that stage 5 months into this, and we're not.
Yeah, I'd like to think so, too.
And you're
saying it's not perfect.
Well, and I think because these decisions start to pile up on each other. Before you send the people from Auburn, and I use that university because they seem to have been the first, before you send them home or to the beach, on the way out, you should say, okay, we just did a random sample of 1,000 students. Please stop by. Not please stop by. Stop by. We're going to test you. If you find out that 500 of them have the disease right now, and the other 200 have, you know, had it a month ago and don't have it. You don't send those 500 home, Kevin. You leave them there.
Whose decision was that?
What?
Whose decision was that?
No, the chairman of Auburn?
Yeah, the chancellor, the president, whatever the title is.
The leadership, all of this should have come if we were on it early enough. And I do blame the sniping. That everything Trump would have said, he would have gotten sniped. I understand that. That I think I do. But somewhere, someplace, there is a time, and this is probably one of them, where you could get, Jesus, him and Schumer and Pelosi and the other idiots all in the same room and say, hey, look it, for 2 months, can we just not fight? That we don't want individual university clowns making this decision. This should be coming from us. If you're going to shut down your school, we want some kind of let us in there 2 days before and find out what you're dealing with before you do it.
Well, Tom, we were busy. We were impeaching the president at the time.
Well, We're tweeting from the can in the morning too. Okay, both sides of
I know.
You know, but the point is the
again. I'm with Hume's comment that the you know, the rambling, boastful, vague, and imprecise didn't help. You know, I'm all with you on that one.
I'm just saying.
But you know, it's again. You're starting from zero. You're just learning about it in January, and. You know, how the question is, what's the reasonable amount of time to have everything up and
Kevin,
running?
Kevin, you can have.
And I don't know. I don't know the answer. If the reasonable amount of time was, you know, say everything's been, you know, has been cooking for a month. Well, okay, so that's at about 6 weeks to get things, just to get things rolling. I don't know if that's good, bad, or indifferent, because I don't have a full understanding of where we were at the time.
Kevin, we're still having
a
meeting.
You're saying December 30th was when this is identified and what it is, and it's a problem, and the Chinese government probably knew way before that, but when, you know, when we started getting things from the World Health Organization as an example. So you're saying first of the year is when we know, and if you think that we've made progress over the last, what, 2 weeks, then that puts us at the end of February. So that's 2 months ramp-up time. If you think we've been doing it for a month, then you're saying, okay, 6 weeks ramp-up time. Is that reasonable or is that not? I don't know.
Last Sunday, they had the meeting, by the way, not 7 feet apart, in the White House with the heads of the pharmaceutical people, essentially cutting up the pie, Kevin. Way too friggin' late for that meeting. And before Merck jumps
on. Do you think they did not talk to any pharmaceutical people before that? Do you think they were not getting input? Do you really think there were no conversations before that?
What I'm saying is, we're now cutting up the pie. Who's getting what? How much we're paying this guy? Are we getting immunity? Kevin, there's been wars we've fought, okay, where all of a sudden we got, you know, we got our ass kicked someplace, and, you know, 4 months later we got rid of the peacetime generals and we got the good guys in there, and from that point forward we had a different look. Okay, but it doesn't mean that the grade from last week to now is approaching a B minus to a B, that from October, when this thing was first identified, till 2 weeks ago, the grade's a friggin' F. I mean, they both can be true.
They both can be true, but October is not a correct time frame.
That's when the first people in China started to have a problem.
That's right. But when was it identified? When was the virus identified and some information around it first identified?
Well, the Chinese tried to hold it up.
December 30th.
December 30th,
Tom.
The Chinese tried to hold it up. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
And, but, you know.
So that's when your clock starts ticking.
Except, you know what? We're up to our eyeballs in China. We must, our idiots over there that have the factories, they must have known people were dropping like flies. Did they not tell anybody? Was it okay?
You know what? You know when the big problem was? You know when this all hit was, after Chinese New Year in February. When it got so acute that things started shutting down, because everybody went, you know, they leave the cities, they go back to their their home, you know, ancestral homes, and that's when it really started to spread. And that's February, Tom.
Okay, well,
that's when it became acute.
All right, but I'm saying our people in China, which we have all kinds of them, had to notice an issue in, well, I won't say October, let's say November. People were sick at the factories. There were problems all over the place.
Yeah. So what did they think? Did we have a bad flu season? What do you suppose they thought? Bad flu season, or something new and different, and it's about to spread all over the region.
My buddy Greg, who's been on the show before, in mid January, he sent me the email last week. We sent it again in mid January, maybe late January. He was in an Uber with a guy from Western China. And he said, you know, I'm an attorney, I'm this and that, by the way, you know, I like the markets. And the guy said, tell us the number. I still have the email. It's something about there's a million people sick and there's been 150,000 deaths. This was in the end of January. And the numbers coming out of China were what? 30 people dead or some ridiculous number.
Something like that, yeah.
Now, but I'm saying we have factories, we have Americans all over the place over there. If they're grabbing body bags in the street, how does that not get back here? Except for the couple of Facebook things.
Although we generally do not have Americans managing the factories.
But I'm saying that this is something. If you're Apple, you have to know this. If you've got the factories over there, you have to have some kind of information back and forth. Unless they're even hiding it from their American guys who own the place, which I wouldn't put it past them. By the way. I'm just saying, Kevin. If you and I were grading ourselves, we would say we're behind. There's drive-through testing facilities in South Korea. You get results back in 4 hours. They have 2.3 ventilators per 100,000 people in South Korea. We have one. They have more ventilators in Italy than we do per person.
We started out with fewer ventilators. Now we're playing catch up.
All right.
I'm not fully acknowledged.
My thing is, Kevin, I think it makes me very afraid from the beginning on this. I've read as much as I can about the 1918 thing, about the SARS. This is the first time I've ever read or seen, except for. Well, I won't say the first time, because a regular flu season, no matter how bad it is the same way. A bad cold season is the same way. You have no idea what the numbers are, because most people just survive it and say the people in the hospital are worse off than me and never even go. And if you went to your doctor 10 years ago and he looked at you and say, you got the flu, go on home, drink plenty of fluid, you'll be all right in a few days. He didn't even report it. So the counting is, but this is the first time I think I've ever heard of anything where different age groups. I mean, you could not even know. Yeah, I was reading this. I told you the other day. Well, I didn't. We talked. The guy from South Korea, where they actually have done studies on people that, okay, you've got it. Matt Weber's got it. stay home. Okay, so you stay home. But they went and monitored the guy like every other day. The dudes, by the end of the time, they said, well, he goes, I've had colds that were worse. He said, if there wasn't this test, if I didn't know to stop in and get it, I would have just thought I had a cold. That's what makes me so afraid of this one. I mean, I'm making it sound like I'm not afraid, but I am. I'm so afraid of this one. I think we need to think outside the box. We have to test people randomly to find out just where it is. We're not even thinking about that.
Well, yeah, but and you know what? I suspect we will get there as we get more available. And there may be some decisions that didn't work out, that weren't good at, you know, that seemed good at the time that weren't. Having managed through many a crisis, I know that, you know, many a work-related crisis. I know that, and I've had to do this before, where you're just getting the best information you can and making choices. What I think you have to do, though, is you have to separate the president's commentary and the administration's actions. And I think pretty much the administration's actions have been pretty good along the way. Perfect? Nah. But the only way you're coming up to criticize them is to say they should have, and they didn't.
Well, okay.
They didn't even know what they had. I mean, heck, we're over here where I live, they were closing schools for the flu. Well, at least now, you know, with hindsight, maybe it wasn't the flu. Maybe it was coronavirus. Who knows? But, you know, they were closing schools for several days because we had a nasty flu outbreak. Is that what people thought they had in China at first?
They
just a really bad flu season? I don't know.
No, I think they knew it was way worse.
Well, who's they? Chinese government or Americans who do business in China?
I think it hurt them much more dramatically, because I've been reading stuff about even males in their 40s that have been lifetime smokers and that pollution are dropping like flies too. But here's what I'm saying right now, Kevin. I just read yesterday the list of now the people who can quote get tested. All right, and you got to give me even if it's 100 of them, you got to give me 100 of those tests, and I'll do a random sample, and I promise to do the sample as best as I could in the Cook County area. I can't go much further than that. I will find the 100 random people, and I'll let you know where we stand. You can't not do that here, because you don't know what you got.
But you know that in just testing the people who are coming in with symptoms, the Cleveland Clinic reported this week that they're getting about 3% of a positive rate on, and that's people coming in saying, "I'm sick, I need a test."
Well, that's because the regular flu is horrible this year too.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's an easy year.
So if you're going to do a random sample of 100, I'm telling you probably right now, you know, speaking of it from a statistical standpoint, you're probably not going to get a representative sample.
If
you're going to have to take several samples of 100, and then you do you average the means of all of those, and then you start to get an idea.
I'm going to say this
really
is, it's very, very difficult to do, Kevin. You could do it with 500 probably, but you got to get to 500. You got to get the right. You have to get those 500. If you do,
sure, it has to be a random selection. There's a whole, you know, the same thing that they're supposed to do in polling to make polling effective.
Well, it has to be a random selection of the name, but you got to find that person.
Yeah. So if you were in a situation though where you had a limited number of tests, how are you going to prioritize? You're going to prioritize sampling, or are you going to prioritize people with symptoms need to get tested first?
I think you got to give me a few.
What will you do?
You got to give me a few. If you got 10,000 of them, don't give me 5,000 of them. Give me 100 or 200. You got to give me something, because I got to know.
Okay, well, I understand that. I also don't know that that hasn't been done.
We'd have heard about it.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Not when you have news people whose idea of, you know, imagine this. You're at a news conference with the President of the United States. You get to ask one question in a crisis, and your question is, rate your team on, or rate yourself on a 1 to 10. How have you done? And
well, I mean,
of course, his response was a 10, but his response was very specifically shifted to his team, and he said, "My team has been great, and I give him a 10. And of course, everybody runs and screams and says, "The president gave himself a 10. No, he gave his team a 10. But
let me,
that's fine. You know, either way. But is that an insightful question that you're going to ask? You get one shot at asking the president a question. That's what you're going to ask him.
Well,
you're not going to get information about the process, about, you know, what the team has learned or anything else. I'm just going to say, rate yourself. What an idiot.
Well, the idea that,
that was.
The idea that this whole performance of this thing is coming down on party lines, all people do is let other people think for them. I mean, there's a lot to be read about this. There's a lot to be determined. And I'm just saying, the people, but I'm not going to blame this on the president, except for the fact if people were out in front of people, he would have said the decision to close universities or not close them should have come from the White House, in my opinion.
I mean, I don't know if it should have because, I think there's a lot of regional impact here. So it shouldn't be, it doesn't necessarily, not everything has to be federal.
I understand that part, but we're talking about shoving 40,000 people or 50, or everybody go to Auburn University or Notre Dame at least had intelligence to say, if you want to stay here, you can't. So they were the one people who did it right. If I'm calling the guy, Kevin, I guarantee, if you're in the Oval Office with me, we're calling the guy at Auburn saying, you did what? Now, do you think your people are infected or they aren't? Well, I don't know. Well, isn't it a different decision if they are versus they aren't? You idiot. Right?
Once they've made that call, how are you going to undo it?
Well,
do you think Auburn consulted the White House before?
No,
Do you think they consulted the task force before doing it?
I think they were like the bartender at closing time. I don't care where you go, you just can't be here. I honestly believe that. S&P futures down 92 still, which is 4%. Nasdaq futures down 328. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. It's Matt Weber, a feisty Mr. Kevin O'Neill. So that's the way we like him. That's because we're all getting feisty. The more we stay at home much longer, we'll be like throwing punches over the over the whatever the airwaves. SP futures locked down here at 92, but I've only got that 3.7%. It's supposed to be 5, but we're definitely locked down there. NASDAQ futures down 328. We're locked there as well. Better indicator is probably the spider, which is not, it's free to move, so it's down 15 points, which is 5.94% in pre-market trading. So I got the Russell down 6%. I got the QQQs down roughly 6%. So 6% is basically the number. Individual stocks, the Apple down 15, Boeing 103, and we'll get some talk to Kevin about the Boeing thing here too, and Home Depot, boy, whack, whack, they're out of TP, stock's got to be down 30 bucks since they got out of TP, man, this is bad, down 13 bucks, 160, Goldman Sachs, again, you know, is taking a little hit down, another 967, these guys are under 150 now, and I don't like these bank stocks, something looks weird there, even though they look like the best buy ever. Anyway, we'll just do the rest of the stuff here first. Over in Europe, we got the DAX down 46, 5.5%. FTSE down 259, 4.9%. CAC around down 221, 5.6%. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei down 284, 1.7%. Shanghai down 50, 1.8%. Hang Seng down 971, 4.2%. Oil, we got down $1.63, $25 a barrel, $25.32. That's unreal. 17-year low. Brent down 101, 27.71. Natural gas, minus 0.06, 1.66. RBOB, 72 cents a gallon. So we're looking at $1.60, $1.70 gas next week, maybe. Bonds, now here, Kevin. I want you to listen to this, bud, as we can talk. I mean, it's been a while since you had an economics class from the guys at Notre Dame. 10-year, 1.11, so up from like 0.49 the other day. Going absolutely the wrong way if you're looking to get it to zero. The Bund, minus 0.30, is minus 0.79. You get all this. Japan, a positive 0.03%. So you would think they'd be going the opposite way. They are not. Gold down 22 bucks, 1503. Silver down 13 cents, 1236. Copper, absolutely in the crapo, 220. Anybody thinks that China is recovering, all you do is look at this copper number, and it is not happening, unfortunately. Maddie, we got for us Trevi Weather Sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a decent start, but up north, a couple of issues to report. On the Edens outbound just before Foster Avenue, there's a crash that's causing some delays. Machos to Lake Cook Road is up to 17 minutes and building, so expect some slight delays. Nothing major if you're heading up north on the Edens. North of that, in Skokie Boulevard between Niles Center Road and Grove Street is closed due to a rollover crash, multi-vehicle accident that happened at about 5 this morning that still has crews working on that, and that has Skokie Boulevard closed between Niles Center Road and Grove Street up in North Suburban Skokie, so keep that in mind. One other crash in the area is out in the western suburbs, 31st Street at Route 83. There is a crash that's in the Downers Grove area out west. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, cloudy and rainy throughout the afternoon. A high of 44 today. Right now it's overcast and 39. Still dry downtown, but rain and winter mix coming up. For our Phoenix listeners, the exact same forecast except about 20 degrees warmer. Rain in the forecast today with a high of 64. Right now it's overcast and 56. In sports, there was a little bit of Bears news. The day after the Bears signed Jimmy Graham, they waived former first-round pick Leonard Floyd, and people were wondering why. And then shortly after, they made a big splash signing Robert Quinn, the star pass rusher from the Dallas Cowboys, to a 5-year, $70 million deal. Quinn will line up opposite of Khalil Mack and should present some major problems up front for opposing teams, especially if Hicks can stay healthy in the middle. The contract includes $30 million fully guaranteed in that deal, the Robert Quinn deal to the Bears. And lastly, Kevin came up with a pretty good idea, since we don't have a lot of sports typically these days, to do a This Day in Sports History. So I have a couple of this day in sports history. March 18th, 1953, the 15th ever NCAA men's basketball championship saw Indiana beat Kansas 69-68 back in 1953. Also in 1953, Chief, the NL approved the Boston Braves moving to Milwaukee, the first Major League Baseball shift since 1903.
Was that when Wilt was at Kansas?
That's a good question. It might have been. I'd have to look.
Because he lost, right?
He did. Yeah, I'd have to look. But the biggest event of interest that I saw that ever happened on March 18th, at least to the city of Chicago, was in 1995. What was the big deal in 1995 on March 18th, gentlemen?
What happened to
Bulls? Well, it would have been the Bulls.
It would have been the Bulls, yeah.
And
was that the shot?
Were they close?
It's March.
A little early for them to have been getting the record number of wins, but that was it. Was it when they got the set the record for wins in a season?
Good guess. That was 96. 1995. It would have been March, so it wouldn't have been the end of the regular season yet. It wouldn't have been the playoffs.
Is that when Michael Jordan came back from being hurt?
It was from being hurt. No. 1995,
no,
Michael Jordan announces he is ending his 17-month NBA retirement.
I'm back. Fax machines were buzzing with the big, I'm back.
That's right. That's right. On this date in 1995. Back to you, Chief.
How about that?
A
couple of notes from the update. Over here, I've routinely seen $1.79 gas. I got $1.69 at Costco. That was a couple of days ago, so it may be even lower. Let me see. There was something. The other news is Tom Brady's leaving the Patriots. He's gone to. He's entered free agency.
Yeah, and all the signs are pointing to him signing with Tampa Bay.
What is the motivation there? I'm trying to be. I'm probably a simple soul on this. Is the motivation there to prove he can win without Belichick? That it wasn't just a tandem.
No, probably the motivation is what he's going to get paid for how long, and how long the Patriots are willing to sign him. If he's looking for 2 or 3 years versus 1 year, the Patriots, and I wouldn't sign him for 3 years because he's going to be expensive for 3 years, and I can't imagine him being that good for 3 years. I don't know. If I were him, wherever I were to go would have the best offensive line going, because he's not going to escape any pass rushes.
You think he wanted to leave, Chief? I think the Patriots didn't want to sign him. I don't think he wanted to leave at all.
Well, they want to sign him for a year. Why would you guarantee the guy 3 years? I mean, even when Brett Favre signed, a 6-year deal with the Packers, it wasn't guaranteed. He wasn't going to play 6 more years. Right?
You're right. Absolutely right. And the Patriots, I think, are smart by saying, we're not going to sign you for anything longer than that. But he has the right to say, okay, if you're not going to give me what I want, then I'm going to go find somebody.
I'll sign him for a decade if I can cut him.
Well, you can, in the NFL, you can always cut him. There's no guaranteed contract.
Well, there's one, no, there's one with the Bears.
So Matty, a question for you is how good are the Buccaneers just in need of a good quarterback?
That's a good question. I mean, Winston threw 30 touchdown passes last year, but he also threw 30 interceptions, first quarterback to ever do that. So they were very exciting. They have two of the best wide receivers in all of football. So he'd have better weapons than he's probably ever had. But I don't know how good the supporting cast is. I mean, I don't know how good their offensive line is or their running game or their tight ends or certainly their defense. You know, I don't think he's like some missing piece that's going to put them over the top.
In terms of arm strength, he better get the little guy who can get open down the middle 20 yards down because he's not throwing the 30-yard down and outs anymore.
No, but for a long time, Brady's real strength has been, you know, he knows who's going to be open before the ball gets snapped.
Right. Well, yeah. So he needs a couple of intelligent
guys on the run. You hit Edelman on the run. The times he's going to be open, and you're going to get a lot of yards after the catch. I wouldn't be overly concerned. You know, heck, I'd take Brady on the Bears next season. But I don't. Although I don't know that the offensive line would be very friendly to him. They'd be totally friendly to Brady. It's just that the pass rushers wouldn't be that are going up against the Bears' offensive line wouldn't be very friendly. But he's, you know, I just don't see if somebody wants to give him a 3-year deal, God love him, you know, go ahead. I don't see that.
I suppose
if you have a team that's Super Bowl ready, but for the quarterback, maybe it's worth a shot.
Well, I don't see why you have to give him a 3-year guaranteed contract. He's not going to play 3 years.
Who says anyone has to give him anything?
Well, but I'm saying the guy from the Bears, you said his entire contract was guaranteed. It's unconscionable in pro football. Or is it a $50 million
it's
contract?
It's a $30 million guaranteed contract.
All right, so that's not the gross number of the contract.
Correct. He signed let me pull it up.
Actually,
he signed a $70 million deal, but only 30 is guaranteed. There's no guaranteed contract.
Well, the guys on the radio when we were driving in, they said $30 million all guaranteed, which is wrong.
30 is guaranteed.
Okay,
I just said that.
All right, but
it's a $70 million deal.
They didn't say 70-30 guaranteed. You did.
It's a 5-year $70 million deal with $30 million fully guaranteed.
You were more accurate than the guy on the radio.
They just told you the guaranteed part.
Yes,
got it.
I expect Matt to be more accurate than anybody else.
Yeah, you know, we do, and
he's in the cybersecurity business, man. You got to be accurate there.
You got to do the best you can. That's for sure,
Kevin. With all this stuff happening with the government helping out and all this stuff, I mean, I'm going to make a couple of points here that I think that are 100% correct. They're not very popular, and you're only going to hear them in one spot. You've heard all yesterday, finally, the government is doing some fiscal policy that the Congress is doing their job, and it's not just the Fed. I will say this absolutely categorically, Kevin, and Matt, if you can find it get it on YouTube, you know, it's not investment advice. At this stage, there is no such thing as fiscal policy. Absolutely zero chance of any fiscal policy. Fiscal policy means that you go out and borrow money, okay, from people and you turn around and spend it. And you gain on that because people normally save and the government never saves. So you pick up that piece. Right now, every single thing that the Trumpers are doing, and the Democrats in Congress, every single thing, no matter what they do, if they go to the can and fart, they're printing money to do it. It's all they're doing is printing money. The Fed is going to the back room. If they're going to send you a $1,000 check, knock yourself out, okay? But don't be the least bit fooled that they're not just printing $1,000 and sending it to you. Not saying it's a bad idea.
By the way, remember back when Andrew Yang was crazy?
Yeah. Yeah, that's all they're doing. And when you see these bonds going the wrong way, that all that is a debasement of your currency, and it's inflationary. It's all it is. Then why not tell everybody how much money you got, Kevin? Well, I got $1 million. Make it 2 million. Let's double everybody's. You cannot create any sort of wealth that way. All you do is mess with the only time that probably something like that was warranted was in 1936 when they finally sent people their bonuses from World War One. That money was spent so fast, it was probably the fastest velocity money's ever had. Okay, was in 1936. And as soon as people were out of the, they sent people 1,600 hours during the Depression. Imagine how much money that was. I bet it lasted in the average home 4 hours, Kevin. With the stacked up things they needed to buy. What I'm saying, be careful where we are here. I saw people and listened to people on CNBC yesterday, and they were talking about small businesses, and I'm not going to call people morons, because they aren't. They're brilliant people. They're on CNBC. They probably got way more money than me, that kind of thing. It's not about that. But you need to look around. The one guy says, it shouldn't be a problem for restaurants, bars, anybody, because money is available everywhere for virtually nothing. Kevin, that money's not available to the people we know for virtually nothing. You look at this stuff, you may say, Jay Pritzker's finally on this stuff. And he's actually, I'm totally criticized. Where's the piece missing about we're closing all bars and restaurants for a month, or for 2 weeks, probably a month and a half. By the way, we're taking a month off your property tax, or your building owner's property tax, your piece of it or something. It's missing, Kevin. It's missing. We're gonna delay the month that you have to pay your taxes for a month. We're not gonna say you don't pay them. Nobody at that end is taking the haircut. We didn't once say, Jay Powell last weekend, $1 trillion into the market, zero interest rates around, and oh by the way, every bank is not gonna charge anybody a credit card interest for the month of April. It's non-existent, Kevin. It is canceled.
Yeah, or we're going to lower the credit card interest. We'll cap it at an obnoxious, at a high number like 15.
Yeah, cap it at an obnoxious
number
like 15.
Still going to shave a lot of money off of the budgets of people who have to make payments.
How many people even know, much less would ever say, Kevin, that one of the most, I'll use the term obnoxious, one of the most obnoxious screwed up decisions ever made by the Supreme Court was that the state of Illinois has a 12% usury law, which I think they do actually, that the First National Bank of Chicago, God rest their soul, can open up a place in North Dakota where there's no usury law and charge the people in Illinois 25%. How did the Supreme Court ever say that was legal? All you had to do is find a state with no law and it circumvents the entire Illinois usury law stuff for their own citizens? That was the Supreme
Court.
Been
doing it for years. That's why Delaware is the big corporate state of incorporation.
And why all your credit card stuff either goes to Charleston or North Dakota, right? Or South Dakota?
Yeah. So that's pretty typical. One thing I will say is, Brendan's perfectly capable and I would invite him to argue back, but one thing he did say yesterday was, well, how about we waive mortgage payments? I don't think the idea that the banks could do that unilaterally, they can't. First of all, because generally they don't own the mortgage portfolio, so it's not
right.
The bank, it's the secondary market people who would have to waive the payments. But any banks there are still some banks that do hold portfolio of adjustables. And in those cases, then cooperation to do it, because as soon as they go delinquent, they're going to start telling you have to, put more in your loan loss reserves. You're going to have to write down your loan portfolio and things like that. That then can create capital problems for any banks that aren't excessively capitalized according to guidelines, which is not the same as excessively capitalized. So there's a lot of Fed involvement that would have to come in that with that too. So I in that particular scenario, I don't know that the banks could do anything. Now, could they unilaterally do an interest holiday or something like that on their portfolio loans? And the answer to that would be, yeah, they should be able to do something like that without creating any kind of regulatory issues or bank examiner issues or anything like that.
So what about your favorite girl, AOC? By the way, does she listen to Stocks and Jacks? Because I was going off yesterday about bailing out United Airlines when they bought back all their stock. Sure enough, later in the day, she's all over them for buying back their... At some point, Kevin...
Yeah, and Frank's been all over that, too. Although AOC said something like 96% of their profits went to it, and without having the time to take a look at that when I saw what you sent me. I tend to doubt that it's 96%.
Well, I don't know how much they. Frank actually sent me something last night that I. What do you think?
He sent a pretty good rundown of the airline stock buybacks, but whether that's 96% of the profits or not, I tend.
Well, they made.
Maybe it is. Maybe she knows something. I don't know, but
it sounds a little high. But I
tend to think 96 sounds like an outrageously high number. It's one of those that you know makes the antenna go up.
I would agree with you.
The radar,
except
they're put it that way.
Their number in 2017 was $3 billion. How much do you think they made?
Don't know.
Well, I'm gonna say I don't think it's 96, but I'll bet they couldn't have made more than 5 or 4. It's got to be some number, some real number.
Well, whatever it is, you sort of undermine credibility when you throw around numbers like that, and they're even if you say it was 5 and 3, and what'd you say, 3 was in stock buybacks?
In 2017. It's
yeah,
just
so if you 60% versus 96% is still a dramatic difference. The point being, you sort of discredit yourself when you say those kinds of things.
But when you do numbers like this, I'm going to say, Kevin, that she's, I use the term correct, all right, with the 96%, but I'll bet that this is just talking off the top of my head because I probably know the numbers better than AOC. I'm going to say that they probably made money in 15, they probably made money in 16, probably made money in 17. And then somewhere in 17, the board got hair up there behind and said, let's buy some stock back because we've got, $7 billion sitting here in cash. And I'll bet that the $3 billion they bought back in 17 might have been 96% of their profits in 17, but not 15, 16, 17 combined. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it may. Yeah, we'll have to see what it is.
Because, she didn't get it out of nowhere.
That's going to require some number crunch. And,
which I'm sure she didn't do.
I didn't have time from when I saw it this morning to do that. The other thing is, it is sort of a rational behavior when the interest rates are near zero. It's pretty rational behavior to say, well, I'm not going to get anything by putting it in any safe and liquid market, so what the heck, just buy it back. Now, that also comes with the assumption that you can sell it again if you need to, and right now, can you sell it?
Well, they probably bought it at 90. That's where it was in 2017. And now it's 30. 28 this morning.
Yeah.
So now, my Boeing, I guess at some point, Kevin, and I don't. My arguments.
Idiot, you did it to yourself. Well, huh? About to say to them?
But my arguments, they may be all wrong, okay, and it could very well be. But at least I try and be consistent. If it's.
Consistently wrong?
Consistently wrong, yeah. Well, I mean, Matt, you've heard me say, if you're going to be the Minnesota, Golden Gophers, and you want me to build you a stadium for $1 billion, okay. And at the end of the day, when we have the conversation now, exactly how much does the city of Minnesota get of the Golden Gophers? Or the Golden Knights, whatever you want to call them? The guy's going to say, well, nothing. Name another business where somebody builds a glistening office tower for PTI Securities, hands it to me, and says, doesn't say, well, by the way, I'm now a proud owner of at least a piece of PTI. How much? I mean, the idea. So, I mean, at some point here, we've given Boeing a pretty much, well, I'll say a duopoly, okay, and at least a cartel on the military side, a monopoly when it comes to stuff like B-52s and tankers, because nobody else can break in, it doesn't appear. How much more do you want?
Natachi writes in on Twitter, Trump considering bailouts for Boeing, hotels, and resorts. Does any of this bother you guys yet? Is this swampy enough for y'all?
Yeah, well.
Well, here's how I want bailouts to work. I've always wanted them to work this way. It's the taxpayers of the United States bailing out the business. So, therefore, I expect my tax stock certificates to show up in the mail for my share of that bailout. And then, hey, if it proves to be worthwhile, good, I'll benefit from it very personally. And if it proves not to be worthwhile, it's the same sinkhole it is now, sinkhole now or toilet bowl probably is a better word where we've poured the money down. So Yeah, I'm kind of with that sentiment that you know, fine, if we think it's so so vitally important to bail them out, cool, but just let's remember who's bailing them out. It's not the government bailing them out. It's the stockholder or the taxpayers of the United States bailing them out, and therefore they're the ones who should benefit when if the bailout is successful.
Well, Kevin, I think there's a certain amount of rationality to this, that there is a certain amount, I mean, common sense. And I think you have a, we only have a minute here, but like an insurance company, a life insurance company, you expect them to have adequate reserves for virtually everything normal, and then double it or triple it or something, right? Whatever it is. And I think that's what you would expect to have. But I also think that if an asteroid lands on New York City and 3 million people get killed at the earning age where 3 million people get $1 million of life insurance, nobody can anticipate that. Okay, so, do you want to be the insurer of last resort as a government? I mean, yes, but this is like a couple of times for these airlines, and it's obvious they don't keep enough in reserve. They can't wait to buy their stock back. First of all,
as we've gone through this whole thing. Who has the money to weather the storm? And they've done it to themselves. Okay, so if we think an airline industry, an ongoing airline industry, is vital to the interests of the United States, that's cool. Okay, if we're going to bail them out, we're going to bail them out. I want to get paid for bailing them out.
Right.
I've become the venture capitalist here. I expect to get paid back.
Well, plus I also would want to look at
we didn't see a cent of GM. You and I didn't see a cent of GM, nor did that reduce the deficit when they paid a lot of it back. None of that happened. So I just want my stock certificate.
We can't come out of this. We can't come out of this with three less airlines worldwide. It absolutely is not the solution. Kevin, thank you very much. Talk to you on Friday, if not before. But we're still locked down, 92 points. I hate being locked down. Well, we have come back just a hair on the spider. The spider's only down 13.78. It was down 6.5%. It's only down 5.5%. But a crummy morning again. Be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But if you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes, have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities, as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, just met Weber on the board. S&P futures still locked down, limit 92. NASDAQ futures locked down, 328. But how the spider, which is trading freely, is down 1390, which is 5.5%. It was actually down 6.4 earlier, so to a certain extent we're coming back, if you want to call that coming back. Do we have the live Russell on the line?
I'm the live and healthy Russell. Good morning.
I'm looking at a cutout over here of a guy with a cardigan and glasses, smoking a pipe, drinking iced coffee.
Wow. Wow, does he have a giant straw?
No, don't tell me you're sitting there naked looking up at, like, dead animals on the wall, like if you're in Skull and Bones or something.
No. It's not that bad. Although I do have some horns up on the wall.
What
some
kind of
bull horns in my home office.
Where'd you get those from?
Friend of the family saw him at a rummage sale for like $3 and gave them to me.
Are these like longhorn bull things where they take you after?
Nah, they're made out of wood.
Oh.
It's something that she said she found it in a rummage sale. I wouldn't be surprised if she was on her daily walk and saw him sitting on the curb.
Well, that's a rummage sale.
It's not that fancy. That's where I'm going with that.
Oh God. Well, Professor, yeah. I've been mm-hmm. lobbing out some economic stuff this morning, and I guess you can grade me. First thing is, these guys have been talking about fiscal policy. There's no such thing as fiscal policy here, is there? Everything they're doing, they're just printing money, or more am I wrong?
They're throwing it out there under the guise of fiscal policy, and I guess in a roundabout way you could say technically it's fiscal policy because it's coming from Congress, but it's really just another form of monetary policy. So I've had that same thought as well. You know that and it is time for the fiscal side to step up. And you know, when everybody criticized the cutting the rates to zero, God, doesn't it seem like it was a month ago they did that?
It was 4 days ago.
Everything we've been through. It was 2 days ago, yeah. Or 3 days ago, I guess. But you know that. The thing is, they say, well, they the Fed's shot all the bullets. They've got nothing else to work with. Well, there's always supposed to be two parts to all of this, and the other part of it is the fiscal, is the fiscal side. But what the fiscal side is, or which would be actions that Congress can take as far as spending and taxation go. I mean, I guess you could think about a $1,000 check as some sort of roundabout tax rebate, but I think it's more of another, it's just another monetary thing.
So, you know, we, our man, we got, our man, Milton Friedman was in a, we were doing, the class that I took from him was Boring as Sin. It had to do with, supply curves. It was very, very mathematical and, you know, gazillion curves and all this kind of stuff. I hated it, but he was easy to knock off topic, right? So one day somebody knocked him off topic into this fiscal policy, and he said, you know, he goes, I don't even recall ever there being a straight fiscal policy. He goes, I don't think you can do it. Fiscal policy means that you go out and borrow money from the populace, and then you spend it as a government on projects. Mm-hmm. And the only thing you gain, the only thing you gain there is savings. But now, if the monetary policy people, the Fed is are asleep, like this year, Reagan on the brain because how long he delayed on the AIDS epidemic. I don't think Trump was anywhere near that bad, but, anyway, now he's reverting back to this is not the coronavirus, it's the Chinese virus. I've heard that in a tweet. So anyway, the, he said we're going to run this $1 trillion deficit this year, which is really going to be more like, well, it was going to be $1.3 trillion anyway, but probably might be like two now.
That's going to be two, yeah.
But there's no way they're going out and borrowing that from the population. The Fed immediately said, we'll raise our balance sheet $750 billion before this even started. So what the Fed basically said is we're going to cover you for three quarters of it. When you go out to sell the bonds through Goldman Sachs, where they make money, they front run it and actually sell it to Russell. They're going to come right out and buy it from Russell through Goldman Sachs and walk it right back through the door. So instead of it be, even today, as dumb as our population collectively can be, we're not ready to just say, we'll give the president, whoever he happens to be, whenever he damn well feels like it, just turn on the printing press and spend it. Instead, we've got this two-step transaction where the Fed, one guy goes out and borrows it and the Fed creates the money and they buy it back, which gets you to the same place, plus commissions to Goldman Sachs. Or where am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong at all. I like how you put it as well.
Well, I mean, it is, but isn't that the simple truth?
No, it's like, you're dead on. It's hard for me to argue against that one.
I was on Joan Esposito's show last night. You know who else was the guest? I think it was Paul Vallis, the guy who ran for mayor and so forth.
He
was head of the schools, and he asked me a question. He goes, where do you think that the policy is failing? And I said, well, let me give you an example of three things I think that need to be done and will never be. I said, the whole idea that anybody, Vito and Nick's Tripoli Tap, can have a bad month or two and walk down to the bank and get a 3 or 4% loan somewhat unencumbered without having to sign for your house or something. And when you know, who would sign off on a personal guarantee with their house not knowing if we're still going to be closed in November? Nobody's that stupid, I don't think. I said none of that is going to filter down to those people. It never has, despite what kind of guarantee or this program. It may sound awful good coming out of the Congress, and Trump will sound good when he signs it, but it'll never happen. It never has. I said, here's a good one for you that you've probably never heard anywhere else. I said, this idea, I said, do either of you guys know how much you can take off on your capital gain on a stock loss? And they're like, no. And I said, well, when I came into business, the market was 800. That number was $3,000. It's still $3,000. And Paul Vallis goes, you got to be kidding me. He goes, I've never even heard that. I've never heard anybody say that. I said, Paul, if you lose $50,000 on Apple, which is easy to do since it's down again today, it's going to take you 16 years to write that off. He goes, how does that number not have been changed? I go, you're asking me. I said, but how does Jay Pritzker not say, I'm closing all the bars and restaurants, by the way, you got a 1 month holiday on property taxes? And now when Trump comes out, say he does send everybody a $1,000 check, why should somebody who works for the city, a teacher, who's home getting paid, why should they get that $1,000? Nothing's changed in their life.
Mm-hmm.
The people who are somehow at home not getting paid, that are supposed to pay for them, they need $2,000. So you turn around and pay the teacher.
I have a younger sister who we've taken completely different paths in life. And I got a text from her this morning that she basically works in a bakery in Memphis and lives check to check, and her brother actually pays her mortgage. And she just sent me a note saying they're going to close down for 8 weeks and she doesn't have any savings.
Right.
If it weren't for her safety net in the form of me, she'd really be in trouble. While you were just talking, it occurred to me, what I'll probably do when I get my $1,000 check is I'll turn around and give it to her.
Right. Well, I'm sure you would. You're that kind of dude.
Yeah. I mean, but not everybody is, you know, not everybody she works with is in a situation like she is, where, you know, she, before my father, who passed away back in the summer, was her safety net. But not everybody has a safety net beyond the government.
Well, how do people not put two and two together? I don't know when you and I talked about it. It was a long time ago when you first came on it. What the average American doesn't have.
Oh yeah,
like $1,000 for rent.
Yesterday, but, you know, I think it was $400 savings.
Yeah,
something like that. And of course, at the time when we'd had that discussion a couple of times. When we had that discussion in the past, it was, yeah, but, you know, when is there ever going to be a situation where they really, really have to draw on that, unless it's some sort of, you know, personal, you know, something happens, or something along those lines, you know, something where they need to replace something very quickly. Well, if you needed to replace something very quickly, unfortunately, banks were very willing to lend money to anybody in the form of a credit card and then gouge you on the interest. That's not really an alternative right now. I'm pretty certain that the number of credit card offers I get all the time, it's going to dissipate very quickly.
The idea that,
you know,
that those guys are going to get free money like forever, and there's not going to be an interest holiday. But I got a little bit of a I mentioned this, I don't know if on Monday or yesterday. It's probably worth doing it again. But I actually mentioned on Jonas Esposito's show yesterday. I said, you know, if you guys got a second, a little bit of a talk between two people. I happen to want to say goodbye to my friends at the Tripoli. So I went in on Sunday. Got a corned beef sandwich. They made like was Monday night, and sitting 7 feet away from this guy sitting there, and you could tell he was this, you know, he looked like a retired accountant. You know, I mean, you shouldn't be able to judge people like that, but looks like he had money. And he says to the bartender, and she's like in tears. She's like, "What am I going to do? I mean, I work 2 days a week here, one day a week somewhere else, and by the way, I teach kids on the internet. Their parents from China pay me, I'll help out with their English." Well, she goes, "I haven't done that for 6 months while all this is going on." And, so the guy says, "Well, didn't you hear the president speak today? And you need to, you know, dig in and see which one of these many programs that the government has there to help people just like you." She looks at the guy and she goes, "I've never been helped by a program in my life, and it's not about to start now." He goes, What are you from Mars? He says the guy takes his last two bites, wolfs them down, and skitters out the door with his tail between his legs. I mean, do these people actually think that people on the low end get helped by any of this stuff?
No.
Well, I think they do.
No.
They have a conscience that thinks they do. Does anybody really know anybody who had a mortgage problem in 2008 that got saved by the government?
No, I do not.
No.
I do not.
You know, Barack Obama was sitting here 6 feet away. He'd say, "What do you mean? I had this plan, this plan, this plan." Yeah, well, never got anywhere. I mean, I'm sure somebody will call in and say, you know, my sister-in-law in Nevada was connected to somewhere. It must have landed someplace, but I don't know anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anybody who paid mortgage insurance. This is one that was, you know, if you paid 10% down on your house instead of 20, right? So you're buying mortgage insurance on the 10. So you buy the place for $250,000, you put down $25,000, and you got mortgage insurance essentially on the other $25,000. So now the place is worth $200,000. I don't know of anybody who said, "By the way, I got the check from the mortgage insurance company. I now only owe $25,000 less on the house." I don't know if anybody got that check. Do you?
No, I don't know. And, you know, they were supposed to be refinancing relief programs and other things. I assume, I don't ever, you know, typically you would think if you were in that situation where you had to take advantage of something like that, the bank would work with you and point you in the right direction on that. And I guess I just, yeah, I don't think everybody talks about their refinancing as openly, especially when they happen to be in trouble. So I'm sure some people took advantage of it.
I don't think anybody got that check. Not that anybody ever.
I don't think it was really. I don't think it was a check situation. I think it was just a way to.
I don't know if anybody.
Things.
I don't know if anybody.
All the fines that the banks paid were supposed to go into a fund that helped in the situation that you're talking about right now, and I don't really ever remember them hitting the end result.
In the immortal words of Michael Corleone, now who's being naive, Kay?
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm saying that's how it was probably supposed to have worked, but where you didn't go right to the government, you know, your bank that saw that you were in trouble pointed you in the right direction.
I think most of these banks, all they did was land these fat servicing agreements.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, who got the fat servicing agreement from the? I don't even know how this works. I mean, and, you know, Audrey and I, you know, we kind of have danced on this one a little bit. She goes in for a foreclosure, and somebody, you know, things $150,000, and the you know, the bid is $130,000. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that the Fed owns at one point what 20% of all mortgages, 25, something like that, or 10. I mean, somewhere in there.
You mean through Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, or
buying the mortgages. I mean, a lot of them are owned by, you know, Saudi princes and people overseas. How does that transaction even work? Who do you call? I mean, Ghostbusters? I mean you're not going to call the Saudi prince. You're not going to call, Jerome Powell and say, by the way, mortgage 444-53, the guy's a 150 bid and it's 155. Will you take it? I mean, the Fed's not, they're not staffed for that. I mean, who even?
No.
I mean,
I thought they were buying the mortgage-backed securities.
Well, in the mortgage-backed security, there's a bunch of mortgages.
Right, but they're not equipped for the individual mortgages.
Right,
I felt like they were buying the mortgage-backed security bond.
No, no, I'm saying is they were buying a what do you want to call it, a tranche of 1,000 mortgages.
Right, which is basically in the form of a mortgage-backed security type bond instrument.
Something from, if you bought them from individual banks, it probably is some kind of an instrument, but even in there.
Yeah, no, they turned the basket of mortgages into a bond-like instrument.
Did you ever, or your parents ever buy one of those? I mean,
Oh, gosh, no.
Well, before you, my stepfather did. He was always into this weird, I mean, he's a bright guy. He bought one, you know, I could ask Dan, but it wasn't an FHA. It wasn't a Freddie or Fannie. Well, who are the guys that gave the mortgages on military stuff?
Not USAA.
No, it was a governmental governmental agency of sorts.
Thing.
Anyway, he buys, I'm going to say back in, God, he's been dead for 10, 12 years, so this was long before that. So let's put a 25-year moniker on that. So say early 90s. He buys, I think he put like $50,000 into it. And he bought, is it Ginnie Mae that was the one for servicemen? I don't know, one of them. And so he gets this thing, and he's supposed to get at the time it was a 6.5% interest on it. So his payment is say $100 a month. Well, every month he starts getting 105, 110, 120. Because every time a mortgage in the package, say there were 1,000 mortgages, you know, somebody refinanced, somebody moved, that mortgage got paid off. So they keep giving you. I mean, you weren't guaranteed the 6.5% for 30 years because the average mortgage.
You had the prepayment risk and a bunch of, and the default risk and things like that. So there was a variable return around it.
But I don't think they ever got any defaults on it. These were good times. But then near the end, I think he must have had one loan left, and he was getting like 8 cents a month. And then all of a sudden, one day he gets a check for like $5, and that loan was gone. It was over. But it was a nice investment. It worked out fine. I don't think there's any defaults. But I mean, that's what when the Fed bought these things, just to keep it even, they had to keep buying them, right? Otherwise,
I mean, that's what they were. they were buying what we refer to as toxic assets, I guess, which were mortgage-backed securities that had a lot of defaults already in them.
I never heard that. I thought they were just buying. I think he was buying stuff from banks just to give banks the money. They were buying them on. I think they were buying them on 100 cents on the dollar when, like, which is what you just said. The value of them was probably 80. That's the way.
I don't know if they were overpaying for them either. I'm sure. Well, to that extent.
Now, if it was you and me,
I mean, I doubt the trading desk for the Fed was overly concerned about the price they might be paying, unfortunately.
Well, let's just say if it was you and me and there was 1,000 mortgages there and we were and we're working for people like you do and like I do for my clients, the first thing we do is say, okay, where's that random number table? You know, you're old enough, you probably actually have one in your library at home. Let's take out 30 of these things and we're gonna go look at the property. So we get in the pickup truck and off we go. And we're going to find that 20 of them, there's people living there paying every month. We're going to find 5 of them, looks like they're in bad shape and they're paying half a mortgage. And we're going to find out 5 of them with a cyclone fence around it and weeds popping up. Right? We're going to get some kind of a sample of what's in this 1,000 if we did it properly. Mm-hmm. Now, the chances of the Fed doing that, I'm going to say, are non-existent.
Oh, gosh, yeah. No, they were. There's no way they were doing the due diligence that they needed to do at that time.
So they pay for
the. But it's the same thing. I really doubt they were paying 100 cents on the dollar.
Okay, so I'm going to say at the time they were probably worth 67, 70, and they probably paid 85.
Yeah, I would say they probably put a little cushion in there.
Yeah, so I mean that's how they refloated these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I'm not saying it's all bad. My point is how do we really want to force this down? Do we really think that a couple of the places that we know of closed can walk down the block and get a 5.5%, I'm not talking about zero, a 5.5%, not sign your life away loan for 2 or 3 months? And I'm going to say it's not even close to being in the cards.
No, it's not big, no. No. Not, as you put it, not even close to being in the cards.
And yet we tell people that it is. Which is worse, the fact that I know they're lying pisses me off, or the fact that it's not happening?
Both, but I would say 51% that it's not happening, and 49% that they're lying about it because they could make it happen.
All right, so we have plenty of time with you, but there's 3 topics that, since I have the intelligent professor in front of me,
my goodness.
Bailouts in general, especially those that have spent a fortune on the bailout they want in the airline industry is $50 billion. In the last 5 years, the airlines have bought back $36 billion worth of stock at probably 3 times the price the stock is today. So there's a beautiful trade.
Mm-hmm.
The other is, what in God's name is happening to Boeing? We've given them a duopoly, for God's sake. And the other thing is, I mean, if you've noticed, you looked at your bonds this morning, they're going exactly the opposite direction as the Fed. Finally, as somebody figured out that them pouring more money in the system is nothing more than stagflationaryism. I mean, Japan is now positive for the first time in how long? The Bund has gone from minus 0.79 to minus 0.29 in 4 days, and our stuff, which made it down to what, 0.4% on the way to zero, is now back over 1.07. So it's having the exact opposite effect.
That might be in the bond market. We have something known as a risk premium, as far as how much interest you demand from certain bonds, and that might be an increase in the risk premium for the U.S. Like, not saying we're going to default. God, I hope we don't default, but saying that people want to get paid a little bit more to buy a government bond than they thought they were going to have to pay 3 days ago, and that's why you're seeing the interest rate creep up like that. I think that there's a reality setting in that this really, what I think going on in the market is there's this sudden scary reality that we're not going to be quarantined for 2 weeks. You're probably not going to have to buy me an iced coffee until September.
It'll never happen. It'll never happen. Healthy people are not going to.
We're going to be quarantined that long.
Healthy people. You can't tell me. I'll tell you what. We're going to get out the guns before then. You can't tell.
God, I hope. Oh,
you better.
I hope not.
You better have some tests in place, and you're not going to get, you know, seven healthy 25, 30 year olds sitting in a house without a test that are perfectly healthy and tell them they can't go out. I mean,
I guess September is a little extreme. I think this is going to be, the text I got from my sister down in Memphis was they're looking at closing down where she works for 8 weeks. And I think my initial impression when I gathered up all my stuff from my office at Loyola last week and came home was that maybe my mentality was I brought home everything I was going to need if I didn't have to go back to the office until April 1st. I just had that, and they hadn't even told us that that school was canceled yet. I just had a feeling it was coming.
Yep.
Now, you know, we've canceled the semester, we've switched to online, and, they haven't said anything about summer school yet, but I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if summer school switches to an online format as well.
I just went through this long argument with Kevin. We only got 30 seconds. Somewhere along the line here, we need to get some kind of an idea with some random testing of where we stand. How many people have it?
Yeah.
How many people are already done with it? And how many people don't have it? I mean, we have no idea. That's
I know.
I mean, that's crazy. Anyway, SP
Futures. Big undertaking, and they're going to get there.
We hope so. SP Futures down 92. NASDAQ Futures down 328, which is not right because that's lockdown limit. The actual number that you can count on here is the Spiders down $15, which is 6%. So we're really down 6%, not 5%. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at
ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Blowing up big Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Professor Russell Rhodes, Mr. Matt Weber, SP Futures. Again, futures lockdown limit down 92. NASDAQ down limit down 328. Spiders down 1554, which is over 6%. So that's the number you kind of want to look at. Boeing, 102.50. Boeing goes under 100. I'm going to be stunned, honestly. Apple down 11. We've got Home Depot down 12. As soon as they ran out of toilet paper, Matty, the sales just plummeted. Just saying. Microsoft down 8. The thing I can say good about this morning is that yesterday I got multiple calls from clients dying to buy in, and I said, you know, we've got the, every time we've had an up day after a crummy day, the next day has been crummy again.
Oh, you're right about that, it looks like.
Yeah, it looks like I'm not sure.
Did we lose everything from yesterday yet?
We're about two thirds of the way there.
Okay.
So that's a Fibonacci retracement, and we'll get Russell's opinion on that. Over in Europe, whack, whack, whack. DAX down 486, 5.5%. FTSE down 259, 4.9. CAC around down 221, 5.5. Over in Asia, not as bad. Nikkei down 284, 1.7%. 16,726, though, is the whole number in Nikkei. It's pretty low. Shanghai down 50, that's 1.8%. Hang Seng down 971, that's a big faller there. 4%. Australia stocks are down more than 6%. So the Aussie is getting whack, whack, whack. Just for yesterday, for review, some good news. Dow was up 1,048. S&P 500 was up 143. And I'm going to say we're going to open down this morning when this comes off at, like, down 110. So it's maybe a little more than two-thirds. NASDAQ was up 430. And we'll probably open up down 380. So, again, a little bit more than two-thirds. Oil in the crapo, down $1.63, 25.32. Brent, 27.72. Natural gas, 166. RBOB, 72 cents. So the only silver lining is when you go to put gas in your jalopy. Bonds going the opposite way from what you would expect. 10 years up to 1.07. The Bund, minus 0.29, so the half a point higher than it was 4 days ago. Japan, positive for the first time in a real long time. A positive 0.03%. Gold, down 1380, 1512. Silver down 5 cents. 1244 and copper, 220 down 11 cents. This is really, really butt ugly. There's no other way to put it, Manny. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Light traffic throughout the area, as you can probably imagine. But still have that one serious issue that happened at about 5 o'clock this morning. We had a rollover multi-vehicle crash up in Skokie, Skokie Boulevard, between Niles Center Road and Grove Street, that has Skokie Boulevard closed. And it's been closed for the last 2.5 hours. As crews continue to work on that. Police are on the scene as well. And that remains closed. So keep that in mind if you're up in the Skokie area. Skokie Boulevard is closed between Niles Center Road and Grove Street. No issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower, Stevenson looking good. Very light traffic, in fact. Same for the Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford. Lakeshore Drive looks good in both directions. Suburban tollways are all quiet, too. Only other crash in the entire area is US 45 northbound at Holly Street up in the northern suburbs. But a very quiet morning this morning. Weather today, clouds, and then some precipitation on and off throughout the day. We'll reach a high of 44. Right now it's overcast and 39 degrees downtown. Rain in the forecast for our Phoenix listeners as well. Raining with a high of 64 today. Right now it's cloudy and 57. In sports, obviously no scores to report, but the Bears continue to make splashes in free agency. The day after they signed Jimmy Graham, the veteran tight end, they signed a veteran pass rusher, Robert Quinn, star pass rusher, in fact, one of the better defensive ends in the league, or outside linebackers in the 3-4. Former Cowboy, former Dolphin, Robert Quinn signs a 5-year, $70 million deal with the Bears, $30 million of that guaranteed. Quinn was very good. He recorded the third best pressure rate and disruption rate in the entire NFL last year among those with a minimum of 200 pass rushes, at 14% and 17.2% respectively, tied for the ninth fastest sack at 2.67 seconds. And he should flourish across from Khalil Mack.
I think he was offside in that play.
Yeah, he had 11.5 sacks and 34 tackles, 3 passes defended, and 2 forced fumbles in 14 games last year with the Cowboys. So there you go. Chief.
Two things. One is, since there is no traffic in the morning, every time two cars collide, it seems to be a lot worse because they're going faster.
I think you're right about that. That's a good point.
And secondly, your understudy, AV, could probably be the least upset person that there's no sports in the world. She doesn't have to do it. She's very happy about that.
Well, Jill's family has a text, you know, that her parents and her brother, and they go back and forth, and her sister-in-law shared a 20-second video of, you know, the little kids are stir-crazy, as you can imagine. They're not at school, not at daycare. And there's a video of her son, our little nephew, kicking a soccer ball basically in the basement against the wall, listening to music, kind of bored, really kind of haphazardly, right? And she sends the video out, and her dad goes, "It's the most sports I've seen in 10 days.
By the way, did you kick on your marquee channel? Oh, you don't have cable, do you?
I don't, but I switched over to Hulu specifically for Marquee. And, of course, they still haven't launched it yet, even though they signed a deal with Hulu.
Well, I think that there's several adjustments we're going to have to make in life. One of them is Eric's dying. I think you and I and Eric are going to have to plunk our behinds down in my living room and watch old Cub games and drink my Yingling case of beer I bought from Indiana.
Well, I'd be happy to have a beer, of course, as long as we're 6 feet apart and wearing masks and everyone's fully washed. I'm cool with that.
Well, I just want to give my rant again. It's very easy to be critical, but I think when I am critical, I think that there's a reason for it. And I'm going to shift gears, Russell, a little bit, talk about some of these university decisions.
We also have some
Twitter
and email
questions. Then we have a million questions that I saved for you, so we're gonna pile into the questions, but. You're involved with the school. Let's just say the school's a slippery rock, right? I think before I send people home, I really have to have a lot more knowledge about who it is I'm sending, what the situation is with them. If I find out that 3/4 of the students are infected in a slippery rock, I can't send them anywhere. Right.
You should keep them in place.
Right. If I find out that 10 of them are infected, and by the way, 500 of them look like they had the infection, and now they got antibodies, but they're over it. I can send them anywhere; they're not going to bother anybody, right? There's no reason for them to stay home. I mean, if we have a measles epidemic, and we find out that for whatever reason, you know, 100,000 kids haven't been vaccinated, or people didn't have it before, I see every reason on earth for them to stay home. But why do I stay home? I had them before. Or if you were inoculated, why should you stay home? I mean, right now, if I had this disease a month ago, or I could tell that I did, and I have the antibodies, why should I stay home? I mean, we're reaching a point here where we have to know more before we tell people what to do, I think.
Well, I think it's a right now it's a stay home until we figure it out.
Right, I would
take the opposite. Yeah. I would say tell people to stay home until we know more.
Okay, but I'm saying we can't be here in July still figuring out who's going to make the test.
No, I think they're getting that under control as quickly as they possibly can. I do believe that we're trying to figure out how to test everybody. But, and figure out who's safe, who's susceptible, and get more knowledge around it. But while you're trying to figure that out, you need everybody to kind of stay in place for a moment.
Well, if you,
I agree with you, Russell, that now they're doing that. What upsets me is that we didn't elect an adult, and now we're paying the consequences because we've known about this for 4 months, and it took until the last basically 7 days for them to let the adults sort of take over and start to take it seriously.
Mm-hmm. Well, the idea that there's drive-through testing facilities in South Korea, and if you're not sick here, you can't get a test, to me is unconscionable. You want to test the people that are okay to see if they can go somewhere. Anyway,
right.
Manny, we got a whole list of stuff for Russell. Start in Russell's wheelhouse and move out.
Oh, boy.
Well, I don't know what Russell's... I think Russell's wheelhouse is pretty expansive.
Well, how about lobbing that Vic's question in for...
I don't know about that. I think I know there was a question about some of the option activity that
last happened Friday. Yeah. Recently.
Well, so first of all, we have to, you know, the preface to this is I was out last week and the Friday before getting married and going on a honeymoon. So this email actually came on Sunday, March 8th. So it's talking about the Friday.
Week ago, Friday.
We're talking about nearly 2 weeks ago. So I don't expect you guys to remember exactly what happened, but you might remember.
But it's happening every day with these limits and stuff. So.
Yeah, Chuck from Clarendon Hills writes in, "Hey, Chief, guys, can you explain what happened the last hour of trading on Friday, which would have been March 5th? Specifically, the trader company on the SPX VIX. Did that trader just lose it on their own or get steamrolled by the PPT Fed? Mnuchin goosing up the S&P? I'm not in the trading business, so please explain it to me as if I'm a golden retriever. I saw the Zero Hedge article on Friday night, but still don't fully get it. Thank you. Love the show. Chuck."
Just for bleeps and grins, there was the allegations of a company who essentially tapped on his shoulder about 2 o'clock, man. Is that what it says? Or 1:30 a week ago Friday, Russell, and there was a quick spike in the volatility that settled down before the close. And since we were still able to go to emporiums that Friday night, we were discussing at our table at the series, and there was some firm that had some issues, and a few guys got pulled out. So there was somebody had to buy stuff back basically, and it goosed the market for a half hour or so. Then it came back down some, from what I recall.
With respect to VIX, and also, hey, Chuck, I'm in Clarendon Hills, too. I don't often share where I actually live.
Oh, wow.
So, Chuck, if you want to, you can walk over to my house, and we can sit very far apart on the front porch and talk about this at some point if you'd like. But I'm that stir-crazy already. But with respect to the way that the volatility spikes like that, the way they calculate VIX is they use the midpoint of the bid and the offer. And if something's happening where people got to get out of their positions, you're going to see people widen out the bid-ask spreads. And when they do that, it actually makes VIX spike up some because that midpoint price that they use to calculate it gets pushed up as well. It used to be, if a big order hit the pit at the wrong time, which was like they only calculate VIX every 15 seconds, and the bids and the offers spread out on the appropriate options at the wrong moment, you would see a spike in VIX. They actually figured out a way to smooth that out when it just happens over a few seconds. But I think maybe in this situation, because it lasted a few minutes, that actually caused something to happen in VIX. I don't think it was a VIX trader that this was happening to. It was an SPX trader,
right? Yeah,
an
SPX trader. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So it's not necessarily, it's just an anomaly with respect to the way that VIX is calculated. And something like that, it used to show up a lot more often than it does now because of some fixes that they made. But in the environment that we're in right now where, you know, an order like that used to be able to be taken care of in a few seconds. Now it can take a little bit more time. You're going to see that choppiness in VIX.
Well, also, if everybody's carefully monitoring their risk, which means how many puts they can afford to be short at any price, and there's 50 people doing that, or 10 people, depending on how many people, well, I'll say 50, all of a sudden one guy with a huge position, they turn around and say, all right, we need to buy like 4,000 of these puts, and the rest of the crowd's going, from who? right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
And I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
And in some of those situations, in the past, if there's been a situation where a large book of trades needs to, or large book of positions needs to be liquidated fairly quickly, they can actually work together as a pit, and people will bid for the whole book of business. I have a funny feeling that with the environment that we've started to get ourselves into over the past couple of weeks, the more orderly process that's behind that wasn't available. And then what I just mentioned does take a little time,
because
you get insight into the whole book, and then you have a risk manager that needs to spend a few minutes, maybe even an hour, figuring out a proper price for the whole thing. If this is happening when we're going into the weekend, you're not going to have it be as orderly as, you know, in a less volatile time.
I got news for you, Russell. If the book is short 1,000 puts, there's no bids.
Oh yeah. Well, you can. Right. You know, if you can do something in the futures market to offset that,
which is hard to do,
but the liquidity across the board in higher volatility times shrinks up. The average bid ask spread for just options in February was up, I want to say, 80% versus January this year. Like, the average bid ask spread in January was about 8 cents at one of the more active exchanges. I don't want to call the one out. And it increased to 13 cents in February. And most of that was just because of the end of February. God knows what that number is going to look like in March. Actually, I won't know, because I don't work at the place where I used to calculate that anymore.
Well, I'm going to give, I promise, a 30-second rendition of how volatility works, so you only know how good this is going to be. If somebody comes in and buys 100 calls from me in IBM, and they're at the money calls, and they're 50 delta, I sell the calls to somebody, and I buy 5,000 shares of stock, right? So now I'm even delta-wise. Now, if somebody comes in and buys 100 puts from me that are 50 delta, I now sell the stock out, so now I'm essentially short the call and short the put, and I'm allegedly, quote, neutral, delta-wise, right? But now the next guy comes in and buys another 100 calls from me. Now, granted, I'll charge him more, ideally, than I did the last 100, because now I'm going, what the hell's going on? And I buy the 5,000 shares again. Somebody else comes by and buys the puts, I'll sell the 5,000 shares, and now the calls and the puts are both going up. Now, my hedge is I'm neutral, allegedly, but now it's just the price of insurance that is going up. There's no real hedge for that, unless I can go buy some calls and puts in a different strike. But if I can't,
if I can't,
it's just the price of insurance is going up. And all of a sudden, the thing I sold at $4 earlier, and then 4.25 and 4.5, is now trading 16. Now I got a problem, because I'm in terms of hedge, the futures aren't helping me, because I don't have a delta problem. I don't have a delta problem. I have a premium problem. I have a implied volatility problem. I mean, go ahead.
No, I was going to say the moves that you're talking about and the moves that we're experiencing, it's real easy. I shouldn't say it's real easy, but it's easier to be a market maker when, you know, the moves are not as choppy as they are right now. Because you just have to focus on your delta. We end up having what we refer to as a gamma problem, or where we have these really large overnight moves, because the market makers can't adjust their positions until, you know, at least when they start trading the stocks, you know, overnight. They can adjust themselves with the futures, but every time they have to readjust, you know, get themselves back to delta neutral, that chops into the potential profits that they hoped that they locked in when they took the other side of an option trade. And the more they have to, adjust their hedge, the costlier it is. And so what they do is they increase the price of the options to account for probably, you know, for having to adjust their hedge more often. That's why we see such high implied volatility right now.
Dodge Demon writes in on Twitter. He says, hi, guys. Hi, Chief. Just noticed Italy banned short selling for 90 days. What if U.S. markets did the same? Specifically, what effect on put options? Thank you.
They did that in 2008, and it was a catastrophe.
Yep. To the moon, Alice, on the put options.
Bob writes in, guys, any guesses on what the deficit will be in November?
Oh, God.
I'm going to say $2 trillion would be an over-under number.
In 1 month?
Oh, I thought when he said in November that he means, like, don't we get the fiscal year end on September 30th and then we find out what it was in November?
No, we started over in October. We're way ahead of last year when it comes to deficit.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought he meant for the year.
Well, for the year, it's got to be at least two. Easy.
Yeah. Yeah. I was kind of misreading that. But that's where I think we'll be at that point.
Dan from Racine, Wisconsin writes in, Chief, I have heard you mention the doctor who has been warning about being careful about shutting schools down because who will take care of her kids. This may have been Michael Osterholm, which I think it was, the director of CIDRAP, Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota.
He had a huge thing on a podcast.
He's been on TV. This guy says, I heard him earlier this week on the Joe Rogan podcast. He talked about the downside of keeping kids home from school is that their parents, who are health professionals, cannot work at a very vital time. He also discussed that the pandemic is going to be about 3 to 7 months with possibly 400,000 deaths. Excellent information. Thank you for your show. I listen every morning. Dan in Wisconsin.
Good for him. Russell White, we don't have that much time, but I got to ask you. My clients have been calling in, and I'm absolutely torn because I look at these bank stocks, and I'm salivating at these prices. Not to mention the premium levels are so high to do covered rights or a covered straddle or something is off the chart. And yet, it's one of those things. I don't know who the first person that told me, if it looks too good to be true, it probably is. And then every night, I can see the Fed pouring money into the system. But then when they start using the term emergency repo overnight, why does that make the hair stand up on the back of my neck and say somebody's not borrowing to somebody, lending to somebody, and the Fed has to? Who's the somebody? It looks to me like, I mean, I'm not trying to be Chicken Little here, but the numbers are telling me when Bank of America has 160 volatility on their puts for this Friday, somebody's telling me that some bank somewhere, I'm not saying it's any of our people, is in trouble. Is it Santander? Is it Deutsche? Is it one of these Italian banks? Somebody's not lending to somebody here, and the Fed somehow is having to throw money down this rat hole to someplace. Do you have any idea where the someplace is? Or is there a someplace?
Well, I have a funny feeling that it's one of the ones that you just named. And unfortunately, this was going on. We've talked about this. This was going on before.
Right.
This started, what, in October?
Yeah, this has been ongoing. Worse.
I mean, there's a bank out there that everybody seems to be avoiding, and the Fed is the one taking the other side of their repo business just to keep the system going.
Right. I'm not reading that wrong. You're agreeing with me. It's somehow something.
No, I'm totally agreeing with you, and unfortunately, like a lot of other leverage situations in the world, this thing is making them pop up very quickly.
Real quick, we're not giving a whole dissertation because we don't have much time. Not many. You got 2 minutes. I'm not going to ask you to explain the repo market, but when somebody does a repo, which means I lend somebody money with the idea that it's coming back to me on a certain date, correct? That's what's called a repo.
Right, and you pledge the securities.
Right. So what happens? What kind of guarantee do I have I'm going to get my money back? Because of the security plan?
You don't have a guarantee that you're going to get your money back. What you actually have is you have a security that you get to keep if you don't get your money back. But the entity that gets the security really doesn't want to have to sell the security to make themselves good. Because if that happens, odds are whatever bank you've given the cash to has pledged not the exact same security, but a portion of the same security to other lenders. Okay. And they're all going to be out there trying to sell the same thing at the same time.
So if the central bank, if the central bank goes to Russell's bank or wherever it is and says, "I want to buy $100 billion worth of treasuries," you just sell it to them. If I say I want to buy $100 billion worth of treasuries, but I really want them forever, only for 60 days, then you're going to buy them back for me, and here's the interest rate. That's a repo. So both sides of the trades are already
pretty much
in. Okay.
Yeah, and you guarantee the price that you're going to buy it back at.
Right.
But and the entity that lends it to you, you know, in the textbook, it's like, well, they're okay. They've been given securities that are worth, you know, that they can just turn around and sell in the market. But, you know, let's say it's a stock instead of for everybody's visualization. Let's say that I've got 1 million shares of Apple, and I go out to 10 banks for a 2-day repo, and I pledge 100,000, I give 100,000 shares to each of these 10 banks, and then I go out of business, all of those banks are going to suddenly have to sell 1 million shares of Apple.
Ugh.
What's that going to do to the actual price?
Right. Russell, thank you very much. Terrific stuff.
You betcha.
Who knows? Might need you before next Wednesday, and you're bored enough to do it. So
I'm around.
Take care of yourself. SP Futures still down, lock limit 92. The bigger number is the SPY down 6.3%. So that's probably where we're going to open. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.